Anyone who knows me knows that my wife and my kids are precious to me. I see them as gifts from God for me to enjoy, and I grow through my relationship with them. They're also precious to me because I see my family, my kids particularly, as opportunities for legacy building. I love my city and my neighborhood, and I'm planted here. But I'm also realistic. I know that I won't be around forever, but I pray that my kids will be around after me. What will I be proud to see them herald? What banner do I hope to see them wave? What life message will the city that I love so much hear from my kids? I have two great kids, both born in New York. But it seems to me that having a significant influence on the city, based on my vision of hope and restoration, calls for the investment of some of my most precious things, namely the people I love. In trying to love my city as Jesus does, I've been challenged to say not only that I had kids in the city, but also that I raised kids in the city, not as a boast, but as a means to love. I am willing to raise my kids here, although many people would find it nearly impossible to do so. When we raise our children to be adults, we leave our cities with men and women who love them, invest in them, and have a hopeful and healthy vision for them. We hope that our children will do the same with their children, and that in the generations to come, our cities will have an army of God-fearing, faithful, loving, and committed citizens. My wife and I wrestled with this idea when our son was transitioning from kindergarten to first grade. From 3 years old, my son had been enrolled in a private Christian school. It was a phenomenal experience. He made many friends and has many great memories. But we felt he was losing touch with the world outside of his experience. He's a pastor's kid who spends most of his time around friends from church, and he's attending a private Christian school. I don't say this to make it seem like a bad thing, but I could understand why he was blown away at the thought of someone not loving God the way that we do, if at all. So my wife and I did our homework. We researched public schools in our district and found the one with which we were most happy. It was a great school, great teacher-student ratio, great staff, and an active parent association. We were happy, but we were also nervous. It was going to be the first time in his school setting that Joe was not going to be a part of the majority. It was going to be the first time that the teachers didn't open the school day with a prayer. It was going to be the first time that Joe would not be able to freely mention God without facing some kind of consequence, big or small. We feared that he would get into trouble with his teachers or be ridiculed by his classmates, but we moved forward. Why? For a couple of reasons. First, we were comforted by the kind of home in which he was being raised. We knew the God whom we as a family served, and we knew the spiritual climate from which Joe was coming. Second, and this was probably the main reason, we wanted our son to learn to love his neighbor. Neighbor can be a misleading word because we often limit its definition to the people around us geographically. But neighbor encompasses more than that. Neighbors can be next door. They can be on your team, or they can be on the other team. You have your family, and then everyone else is your neighbor. Yes, everyone else. At times, Joe was so surprised by people who didn't share our beliefs and love for Jesus that he almost didn't know what to do with them. Sometimes he would disengage altogether. But if we wanted